Now, if you have a Bible with you, you may care to have open the chapter that we read together from the Gospel of John and chapter 4. This is a chapter that has a huge number of things in it that are relevant to each one of us to understand. But the one that we're going to look at today comes from towards the end of Jesus' conversation with the woman of Samaria. And from this, we're going to consider the subject of who is God? What is God like? We have the belief in the world today, it has been around for thousands of years, but it is very prevalent now, and that is that all religions lead to God. And we are considered by the media, and as a consequence of that by the majority of people in the world, as being weirdos and oddities. We would be considered to be racists, we would be considered to be obnoxious, the dung, the refuse of the world, because we do not believe that all religions lead to God. So no matter what illustrations might be used, so here's a mountain, lots of paths up the mountain, and Christianity is but one way up the mountain, whether it be, God is like an elephant, and we are all blind men, and we all grab different parts of the elephant, so someone says an elephant is like a trunk, or an elephant is like a tree having a hold of his legs, or someone else has got a hold of his tail, someone swinging from his ear, and so they all give different descriptions, but it's all the same God. Well, this is in fact nonsense, because God's not an elephant. God has not spoken in those terms. Those people who do think that all religions lead to God, all religions are basically the same, then compare Buddhism with Marxism. Marxism is a religion, and it's a lesser religion, socialism. They're religions. Islam, Melanesian frog worship. Compare them to each other. You could compare them to the religion I was going to mention, but the word has slipped from my mind. There was a letter in the Advertiser last week, all about a science fiction prize. But in fact, it got nothing to do with science fiction. It was basically, for those who knew, a recruitment advert for a particular cult, which is based in East Grinstead, and is, that's the one, Scientology. Lafayette Ron Hubbard, in whose name the so-called prize is being given, was the founder of Scientology. And they're always on the lookout to recruit people. And you know at least two people who are, or at least were, certainly members of Scientology. If you ever watch a film, one of them is Tom Cruise, and the other one is John Travolta. They either are or were Scientologists. And this is a crackpot religion, which claims to be scientific, but is anything but. And it seeks to lure people in by having first made contact with them, getting them to do what they call a personality profile. Now, do your personality profile, and the conclusion of the personality profile is, oh, look, you're inadequate, and you really need Scientology to help you out. If you ever come across anything like that, avoid it with a barge pole, because it is a false religion. Of course, you get people who say, well, of course I believe in Jesus, but when you talk about Jesus being the judge of the world, you talk about people being cast into hell, well, they will jump up and down and say, but my God would never do that. Well, who's your God? Not the God of the Bible. So we need to examine the Bible to find out what God has to say about himself, so that what we say, what we believe about God, is what is true. Not what we've imagined, but what is true. We also need to remind ourselves of God's attributes, what he is like. You might remember in 1960, the Russians lit the blue touch paper and stood back, while Yuri Gagarin, sitting on top of the rocket, went up into orbit. And when he came back, to be fair, I can't remember if it was him, but certainly one of the early Russian astronauts, when they got back and they said, "We've been up into space and we didn't find God's footprints anywhere. We didn't see God anywhere. So this confirms that there is no God." Oh, that's stupid. That's like saying, "I've been to Buckingham Palace. I've never seen the Queen, therefore she doesn't exist." And you say, that's daft. It's just as daft as what that Russian astronaut said. But unfortunately, that's what people say. You have various people. The most famous is Richard Dawkins, who says he will only believe those things which he can sense through his five senses. And since you cannot sense God through any of your five senses, therefore God does not exist. But of course the man is irrational. He calls himself a rationalist, but in fact he is an irrationalist. Because he says he will only sense things that he can sense through his five senses, but he is opposed to fascism. He thinks it is wrong. Well, what is wrong? What is right? How can you sense those through your five senses? How do you determine any morals at all? On the basis of what he said, sensing through your five senses, you cannot sense whether something is right or wrong. You cannot do a scientific experiment and say, "Now, adultery, is it right or wrong? Now let's carry out some measurements." No measurements to be made. Well, what about when a young man says to a young woman, "I love you"? How much does he love her? Can we get the scales out and put his love onto the scales and measure how much his love weighs? Well, of course you can't. Or can we get a ruler out and measure it that way? No, you can't do that either. Or can we go to, a company in Manchester and buy a great big piece of equipment and use that to measure how much he loves her? Well, of course you can't. Love is not a physical entity that you sense through your five senses. I wonder what on earth Richard Dawkins says to his wife. We cannot sense God through our five senses, and so therefore our knowledge about God and who he is and what he's like has to come from elsewhere. Now the first thing that many people use is their reason. It's their what goes on in their heads. So like they say, well, 1 + 1 = 2, therefore they draw deductions and conclusions. They reason. Now there is nothing wrong with reasoning, as long as it is reasoning in the right way, but people can reason in the wrong way. But if we reason the right way, we look at one another, we look at the world, and we conclude, if we are truly being reasonable, we conclude that this world was made by someone. We were made by someone. We were not made by something. We were made by someone, because we are rational, reasonable, feeling, thinking. Something that is unfeeling and unthinking can't have made us, can't have designed us, but we are clearly designed. We have been made according to a plan. And so the person who made us must be a person. Not a human being, a person. Someone who thinks, someone who feels, someone who has emotions. And we will conclude also that this person is powerful, because none of us can make something out of nothing. None of us can make anything. You can't take a pile of rocks and make them into a living thing. We can't do that. And that will never happen. It's never been done in the past, it will never be done in the future. So, there is someone who has made us to a plan and to a design. Because if that is not true, we're just a collection of chemicals and there are no morals. We're here as a matter of chance, and whatever we do, it's just chemical reactions going on in the brain. So when I wave my arm around, it's not because I have said to myself I'm going to wave my arm around, it's because for some reason, perhaps a cosmic ray passed through my head, and it's caused certain chemical reactions, and it makes my arm go up there. That's the sort of thing that you have to say if you deny the existence of God. So these are ways in which we can know something about God if we are honest and rational. The problem is, we can learn, without reference to the scriptures, that people in the world are opposed to God because they deny his existence. In spite of all the facts, all the evidence that is constantly bombarding them, bombarding their senses, look, this world was made, look, this world is moral, they deny it. No. There's no God, but there are morals. Yes, there are emotions, but there's no God. You can't have it both ways. That's irrational. But they still say it nonetheless. So we know, from the way the world is, that people are rebels against God. They don't want to acknowledge his existence. But that's about as far as it goes. That's all we can learn about God, from looking around us. If we're going to learn anything about God, God has to reveal his truth to us. And it's in this book, the Bible, that God has given to us, that he reveals himself. It's in this book that he has spoken. Now, we have dealt in the past with why we believe that this is God's book, and in this book God has spoken. So, since that will take at least another half hour, we're not looking at that this morning. You can borrow the tape on that subject if you wish to pursue that further. But the scriptures tell us that God has revealed himself, and revealed himself in the scriptures, and revealed himself most fully and perfectly in the person of Jesus Christ. And so what does the scriptures, what does Christ in this chapter tell us about God? Well, Jesus has been dealing with this woman, and he starts off by just asking for a drink, which amazes her to begin with, because she's a Samaritan and he's a Jew, and there's great animosity between those two peoples. So she's surprised and comments on the fact. And then Jesus leads her on by talking about living water. She hasn't a clue what he's talking about. He's talking about the spirit dwelling within. She thinks he's talking about literal water. And so, having led her on, and she says, I want this water, he's then got to take her on another stage. Go and get your husband. But I haven't got a husband. Ah, you're right in saying you haven't got a husband, because you've already had five, and the man you're with now, you're not married to. She's shocked. How did this man know all about her? Who told him? Well, no one could have told him. If he'd have been in the city, people would have said, this Jewish rabbi has been walking around the city. She'd have heard about it. No. No one told him. So she says, Sir, I perceive you're a prophet. Quick, let's change the subject. Let's change the subject onto something a bit more controversial. Something that gets away from my moral inadequacies. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, and you Jews say that in Jerusalem is the place where one ought to worship. Thinking, this'll get him away from the subject. Jesus said to her, Woman, believe me, the hour is coming when you will neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem worship the Father. You worship what you do not know. We would know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews. So Jesus is telling her, you have an inadequate revelation of God. We have the complete scriptures. God has revealed it to the Jews, not to the Samaritans. Only to the Jews at this point was God's truth revealed. And when he says that you worship what you know, and talk about worship on this mountain or in Jerusalem, he's talking about something physical. He's talking about literally bowing down to the ground. And people at the time thought if you were going to worship God, you had to do it in special places. The Samaritans thought it was on this mountain. The Jews thought it was only in the temple at Jerusalem. That's where you went and made your offering, and you prostrated yourself with your head on the ground as a sign of your submission to God and begging for God's mercy. But Jesus goes on, the hour is coming, and now is when the true worshippers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, for the Father is seeking such to worship him. So God no longer requires physical prostration. God no longer requires attendance at a specific physical place. It's now a matter of what's in the heart. It's a spiritual matter. And the reason for that, and this is the tremendous thing that Jesus says here, verse 24, God is spirit. And those who worship him must worship in spirit and in truth. Now this is one of the most tremendous statements of the Bible. And this helps us to understand why the Russians could not find God's footprints. This helps us to understand why Richard Dawkins cannot sense God through his five senses. It is because God is a spirit. God is not a physical entity. When God speaks in the scriptures of opening his eyes and looking down upon the human race, when God speaks about stretching forth his hands, he's using what are called anthropomorphisms. We often in daily life use anthropomorphisms when we're talking about insects or animals. Children's animators do it all the time. When you have animals behaving as if they were humans. Because the only way we can understand things is from a human perspective. We don't know what it's like to live as an ant, because we've never been an ant. We don't know what it's like to be a dog, because we've never been a dog. We've only ever been human. A man only knows what it's like to be a man. He doesn't know what it's like to be a woman. And vice versa. And so we have to resort to anthropomorphisms. We express things in a way that we understand. And so God expresses truth about himself in ways that we will understand. And so he speaks about his eye, he speaks about his mouth, about his hands, about stretching forth his arm, in order that we can understand these figures of speech. But it doesn't mean that God has literal eyes, mouths, hands, etc. Because God is a spirit. And this is why you find in the Ten Commandments there is a prohibition upon the erection of idols. Because if you make an idol, if you build an idol as they did during the Exodus, Moses was up the mountain receiving the Ten Commandments, and down below they were saying he's been gone an awful long time. Let's go back to Egypt. Let's build an idol. And this idol will be Yahweh. Well, they built a golden calf. And they started to bow down and worship this golden calf. And then Moses returned with the Ten Commandments, one of which said, you shall not make any graven image. Why is that? Well, ask yourself the question. Does God look like a golden calf? Does God look like a man with an eagle's head? Does God look like any of the representations that have ever been constructed of him? Perhaps you're familiar with William Blake's painting of the creation of Adam. And there is God on the right with a long flowing white beard, stretching out a hand, and it's almost touching the hand of Adam, who is also stretching his hand out from the left, and they're almost touching. Is that what God looks like? No. God is a spirit. God doesn't look like that, because God does not have a physical form. Now, when you're praying, and when you call upon God, do you have a mental picture of what God looks like? Do you think in your mind, now, there's God up there, ascended on high on a throne, and you have an image of some physical form upon the throne? Well, that's wrong, that's an idol. Because God is not like what you imagine. God is like as he is, not as we imagine. And there is nothing in Scripture that tells us what physical form God takes, because Jesus said, God is spirit. He does not have a physical form. And so therefore we cannot represent God by any work of art. No matter what the artist may say, no matter what the art critics may say and how wonderful this work of art is, if artists attempt to present God in a physical form, it is an idol. And it is forbidden by Scripture because it is a wrong image of God. It is merely the artist's imagination. It does not conform with reality. And this is difficult for us to grasp because we only tend to think in terms of the physical. But God is not physical. And so therefore we cannot represent him in any physical form. Now, the Athenians had exactly the same problem, and Paul had to show them the folly of their idolatry. In Acts chapter 17 and verse 22, Paul stood in the midst of the Areopagus and said, "Men of Athens, I perceive that in all things you are very religious," or the word can also mean very superstitious. "For as I was passing through and considering the objects of your worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, 'To the unknown God.' Therefore, the one whom you worship without knowing, him I proclaim to you." God, who made the world and everything in it, since he is the Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands. So people build very big and ornate buildings saying, this is the dwelling place of God, and of course it isn't. God doesn't live in places like that. He doesn't need them. This is not God's dwelling place. Because if we say this is God's dwelling place, we're saying God cannot be bigger than this building, because otherwise he couldn't occupy it. And some people have therefore reason, oh, you need to build a bigger one, and they build huge, great big cathedrals. But then you're still saying, God is so small, he would fit in here, and of course it's nonsense. And it's still assuming God is physical, and God is not physical. God does not dwell in temples made by hands. Nor is he worshipped with men's hands as though he needed anything, since he gives to all life, breath, and all things. And he has made from one blood every nation of men to dwell on all the face of the earth, and has determined their pre-appointed times and the boundaries of their dwellings, so that they should seek the Lord in the hope that they might grope for him and find him. Oh, he is not far from each one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being. So without God we would not exist. We live by God's good pleasure. We dwell in this world because we live in God. As also some of your own poets have said, we are indeed his offspring. Therefore, since we are the offspring of God, we ought not to think that the divine nature is like gold or silver or stone, something shaped by art and man's devising. Truly, these times of ignorance God overlooked, but now commands all men everywhere to repent, because he has appointed a day on which he will judge the world in righteousness by the man whom he has ordained. He has given assurance of this to all by raising him from the dead. It is foolish to create idols of any kind and any variety. You go into most Roman Catholic buildings, you will find idols. You go into some Church of England buildings, you will find idols. They will say, well, of course they don't worship them. Then you see them kneeling down before this statue. And kneeling down is what the Bible calls worship. Every time you kneel, you're worshipping. The question is, what are you worshipping? But Jesus says we don't need to do it physically. But these people do bow down before idols. And these idols are sometimes a representation of people that are not dead. Sometimes they are the representation of Christ. Sometimes they are even the representation of God. But they're idols. The making of them and the bowing down before them is forbidden by God, because only God should be worshipped, and God should be worshipped in spirit and in truth. That is, you must worship the true God. Not that you can worship any God, it doesn't matter. You must worship the true God, the one who exists, the one who has revealed himself in the pages of Scripture. It must be in the heart, it must be spiritual, and it must be according to truth. So if we learn nothing else this morning, and this is the thing that I want us to remember this morning, God is the Spirit. He does not have a physical form, and so therefore our approach to him can only be spiritual. It is a matter of what is in our hearts, not what is done outwardly. If we're going to approach God, we don't crawl on our hands and knees. We don't even have to go to a special place or a special building. We go to God because God is a spirit who is everywhere. Because he is everywhere, we are able to go to him wherever we happen to be. Whether it's here this morning, whether it's in a car, whether it's sitting in our bathtub, whether we're on a train, whether we're flying through the air in an aeroplane, we can go to God anywhere. Because God is a spirit. He is not bounded by time and space as we are. So, do we worship God? Do we know God? Do we know God's blessings in our hearts? God has appointed the means by which we can learn more about him. The means is to learn what the Scriptures teach. And we can learn that either by reading the Scriptures directly for ourselves, or hearing the Scriptures proclaimed. But having heard, God then expects us to respond in the appropriate way. It's not the council's fault if the council puts up a road sign and people ignore it. They put up a sign that says, warning, sharp bend, but people try and go round the bend as if it was a straight road. Whose fault is that? Is it the council's fault? No. The driver's fault. If you see a sign that says, warning, deep water, and you jump in and drown, whose fault is that? Is it your fault? Or is it the fault of the person that put up the warning sign? Well, of course, it's your fault. Well, we can go through and give lots of other examples like that. Is it God's fault if you ignore the way that he has provided? Is God's fault that you ignore what he has said? Is it God's fault that you end up in hell? Is it God's fault that you live a miserable life because you fail to listen to what he has to say? So that you don't find the way of peace? And you don't discover the joy that is available to those who believe? Whose fault is it? Is it God's? No, it's ours. God has said that he is a spirit. He is not physical. Therefore, we cannot imagine him in our minds. He is infinite and immense, as we shall see in weeks to come. We must remember. We must come to God. And we must come to God in spirit. And that is one of the reasons why, if you have ever wondered, why, when we have any kind of evangelistic meeting, I never say, and I want you to come to the front. Because what that's doing in the minds of some people is saying to them, it is your physical activity that brings you to Christ. It's not. It's your going to Christ. Going to God through Christ. It is a spiritual matter. And these things are only achieved spiritually, not physically. So remember these things. And remember that whenever you want to come to God, you come to God spiritually. You don't have to wait till next Sunday. You can do it immediately. God will receive you immediately. If you come to Him in the way He has prescribed through Christ, you can all come to God by coming to Christ and trusting Christ and surrendering to Christ. And then we will know what God has for those who believe. Such blessings as are unimaginable. Such blessings as are overwhelming. Such joy that is unspeakable and full of glory. It's available to those who worship God in spirit and in truth.